ceasefire took effect. The Israeli violations continue in harsh humanitarian conditions. Storm Byron has worsened the conditions, bringing heavy rain and wind to the devastated areas. Bada Ibrahim is joining us now from Deir al-Bala in central Gaza with more updates on the situation from the Gaza Strip. Bada, what do you have to share with us right now?
Again, since the beginning of the ceasefire, the Israeli occupation army targeted the eastern parts of Khan Yunis city with very heavy artillery shelling and air strikes around the hour. And until now, more attacks are taking place, and these areas are subjected to very heavy artillery shelling and shooting from the Israeli tanks. And it is worth mentioning that these areas were outside the yellow line zones, and the Israeli occupation army is protecting, like they are red areas and no one is allowed to come near. However, many families were sheltering inside these areas and the areas outside or that are near the red or near the yellow line zones. However, since yesterday, the Israeli occupation bulldozers and tanks advanced towards the people who are sheltering in this sheltering school in the eastern parts of Khan Yunis city, that they are actually shooting at the people and besieging them and causing a crisis unfolding around them. So this is actually coupled with more attacks on the eastern bars of Deir al-Balah city, the eastern bars of Al-Maghazi and Al-Bridge refugee camps. And in the meantime, more attacks are taking place on the eastern bars of Al-Sha'af neighborhood, Al-Shaja'iyya neighborhood, and also the eastern bars of Al-Zaytun neighborhood. These areas are subjected to very heavy attacks since the beginning of the ceasefire until now. We are now we mentioned before that we are one captive away from entering the second phase of the U.S. brokered ceasefire. However, on the ground, the situation is different, and it is very difficult for the population as they are actually they don't see that the terms of the first phase of the ceasefire agreement concrete on the ground. However, on the ground, the war is continuous. More attacks, more explosions are taking place. More Palestinians, more civilian lives are falling victim to these attacks since the beginning of the ceasefire. Until now, we are talking about at least 380 Palestinians killed and around 1,000 Palestinians injured. And the hospitals are still overwhelmed by the influx of the casualties and by the critical injuries that are coming and influxing from the eastern bars of Gaza City or the areas behind the so-called yellow line. Again, these attacks are not actually only focused on the eastern bars or the parts that happen to be behind the so-called yellow line, but also on the western parts of Gaza City and the western parts of Deir al-Balah. For example, yesterday or in the past 24 hours, half a dozen Palestinians were injured as a result of an attack on near a mosque or in an area that are densely populated in the western parts of Deir al-Balah city. Again, these attacks are continuous. They are causing more bloodshed, and they are actually giving the people the vibe that the war is not over yet. However, in a less noisy pattern, that most of the people are nowadays suffering, not only because of these continuous attacks, but also because of the humanitarian crisis that are continuously affecting the people's lives and threatening the lives of hundreds of thousands of families, particularly those who are trying to survive in the tattered tents in the western parts of Al-Mawasi, the western parts of Ash-Shatta refugee camps, and the western parts of Deir al-Balah, for example.
All right, thanks a lot. Bada Ibrahim joining us from Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Most families in Gaza are living in tents they built themselves, scraping together whatever wood pieces found to keep them standing. With Israel's blockade still preventing essential supplies from entering, many lose their shelters over and over again. In western Khan Yunis, a makeshift workshop has started repurposing wood to offer families an alternative. Ahmed Al-Najjar reports from Khan Yunis in southern Gaza.
Across the crowded western areas of Khan Yunis, tents stretch as fragile shelters held up by one essential material, wood. Yet even the simplest material is denied to Gaza's displaced families. Wooden pallets, once lying discarded on the roadside, have become a treasure for anyone desperate to keep a tent standing against wind and rain. That's what Rami Ibrahim understood. With his worn-out saw and a rusty hammer, he set up a small makeshift workshop, salvaging every splinter he could collect. From sunrise to sunset, Rami and his children worked together, cracking boards apart, pounding nails and joining short pieces into long, sturdy supports, repurposing scraps into the pillars that can hold fragile shelter standing.
Most of us now live in tents, as no caravans or suitable housing units have arrived. While many people break down these pallets for firewood, I try to collect them from those who fetch them after aid or commercial deliveries. My children and I carefully transform these scraps into something usable. I even built my own workshop structure from this wood. As the weather grows harsher, at least when people lose their tents, they can find an affordable alternative.
Here in Gaza, wood has become a rare commodity, not for furniture, but for survival. With materials blocked by Israel, the scraps of wood recycled here are the only option for many displaced families to hold their tents from collapsing.
For the displaced families, the fear is no longer limited to Israel's bombs. Even the weather can tear their tents down. On a nearby road, Abu Ihab has just got a few wooden boards from the workshop. He lays them to rebuild a new tent after his previous shelter collapsed under the brutal conditions. With only a handful of boards, he hopes this rebuilt structure will withstand the winds this time, offering his family even a fragile sense of stability.
This isn't the first time I've used these wooden boards. They cracked during the last storm and caused my tent to collapse. Now, I got them again from a nearby workshop. But we really need stronger wood and tarps. What would truly help are proper housing units. Yet, they still haven't arrived, leaving us trapped in this endless cycle.
For Abu Ihab and countless others, the meaning of refuge has long been lost in the ruins of the homes Israel destroyed. No matter how many times they rebuild or reinforce their tents, the struggle remains the same. Families continue searching for materials or any form of proper shelter, but what they truly need remains out of reach as long as Israel blocks the entry of essential construction supplies. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis, Palestine.
UN Children's Fund UNICEF says severe malnutrition among mothers in Gaza is fueling a surge of underweight and premature babies.
At least 165 children are reported to have died painful, preventable deaths related to malnutrition during the war in the Gaza Strip. But far less reported has been the scale of malnutrition among pregnant and breastfeeding women and the devastating domino effect that that has had on thousands of newborns. In Gaza's hospitals, I have met several newborns who weighed less than 1 kilogram, their tiny chests heaving with the effort of staying alive. Low birth weight infants like these babies are about 20 times more likely to die than infants of normal weight.
The UN agency warned that the number of pregnant and breastfeeding women who are suffering from acute malnutrition is rapidly rising. It added that in October alone, a total of 8,300 pregnant and breastfeeding women were under relevant treatment. Meanwhile, the UN says insecure environment, delays, and denials of cargo at Gaza crossings still seriously hinder the transportation of urgently needed items. Iran's ambassador to the United Nations says the world must stand against the role of certain Western media that have aided in justifying Israel's genocidal actions in Gaza. Amir Saidi Ravani slammed those media outlets for distorting realities and using inhumane language. He made the remarks at a high-level General Assembly meeting held to mark the Genocide Prevention Day. Iravani emphasized that many Western governments have facilitated, legitimized, and even normalized the genocidal campaign in Gaza while they hide behind diplomacy. He said these governments have reproduced colonial narratives and Israel's distortion of international law. He pointed out that the International Court of Justice, in its advisory opinion, referred to what has happened to the Palestinian people in Gaza as genocide. The Iranian UN envoy underlined that Israeli crimes in Gaza cannot be justified, minimized, or concealed. We're now joined by Jahangir Mohammed, Director of Center for Muslim Affairs, who's with us from Manchester. Mr. Mohammed, welcome to the program. Give us your perspective on these recent comments coming from Iran's ambassador to the UN. Amir Saidi Ravani has highlighted the role that certain mainstream Western media played in legitimizing and even downplaying This is Israeli genocide against Palestinians in Gaza.
I think that's absolutely correct. I would go even further. I would say that the Western media, mainstream corporate media, mainly controlled by the US, has actually facilitated the genocide by decades of dehumanization of the Palestinian people and sanitizing of the Zionist state and Israel, you know, on their portrayal of the Palestinian people and the image created that they've created for Israel and the Zionist movement and its agents around the world. So they've actually aided the genocide, just as we saw in Bosnia and elsewhere. Genocide propaganda is a key part of genocide, and they've certainly been doing that. And during the last 2 years, they've continued to do that by only putting forward a Israeli acceptable narrative, and even that gets criticized as being anti-Semitic when it suits them. And even now, as you've reported, conditions in Gaza, that just doesn't get reported to that level of detail in the West. So the genocide is continuing as we speak. We had yesterday the Prevention of Genocide Day, and yet in 2 years, nobody has done anything to prevent genocide.
All right, thanks a lot, Director of Center for Muslim Affairs, Jahangir Mohammad, speaking to us from Manchester. Elsewhere, the FIFA chief is facing a complaint over a peace prize awarded by him to the U.S. president during the World Cup draw in Washington. The complaint was filed with FIFA's Ethics Committee by international human rights group Fair Square. The UK-based advocacy group accused Gianni Infantino of violating FIFA's duty of neutrality. It argued that the organization's behavior goes against the common interests of the global football community. Fair Square warned that if Infantino acted unilaterally and without statutory authority, his support for Donald Trump's political agenda should be seen as an egregious abuse of power. Similarly, a New York-based rights group condemned FIFA's decision, saying there's no sign of peace and unity in the Trump administration's human rights record. Pakistan has also commemorated the UN Genocide Prevention Day, which fell on December the 9th. A seminar has been held in Islamabad to mark the occasion. Our correspondent Nasser Kazemi reports from the Pakistani capital.
Pakistan's capital, Islamabad, marked the International Day of Commemoration and Dignity of the Victims of the Crime of Genocide and of the Prevention of this Crime. A seminar was held bringing together former diplomats, members of parliament, think tank researchers, university faculty members, and students. Speakers reflected on historic and ongoing genocides targeting Muslim communities, saying Gaza today represents the world's gravest moral failure. Participants described the situation in Gaza as catastrophic, urging Muslim countries to stand united to defend the rights of the Palestinian people. They said nations like Iran, which have shown firm diplomatic resolve and a strong stance against Israeli oppression, can send a powerful message to the world.
I think it requires the realization and united action by the entire Muslim community around the world. It is not only some people who raise their voices and it is then forgotten. Iran has taken a stand which is a beacon of light for all of us.
Meanwhile, a Muslim unity conference was also held on the outskirts of Pakistan's capital, Islamabad. Participants from diverse backgrounds rejected U.S. President Donald Trump's plan to end the war in Gaza, calling it a complete fraud.
The so-called peace promise made under Trump's leadership is nothing but a fraud. There is no ceasefire. The massacres continue. The genocide continues. Even the areas Israel was supposed to withdraw from remain under siege, and aid is still not reaching the people.
The participants emphasized that Gaza has become a defining test for the Islamic world, urging Muslim nations to take a united stand against occupation, injustice, and genocide of Israel.
Public anger keeps growing across Pakistan as the Israeli genocide in Gaza continues unabated amid international silence. Many fear that without global action, the catastrophic humanitarian crisis will intensify. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
That I've said, no, they don't mean nothing at all. Time just flies by when I'm with the one I love. Even sunlight makes it through the dark in a cold, misty sky. Now, still haven't made a sound. Some folks are dying to live, and others live to die. Somehow, when I think of you, I smile deep inside. No matter what the world brings, and even if the birds won't sing, better times are on their way, cause I know you're there. And even if the sun won't smile,
of Jalali, Tehran.
Aruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with the reporters.
The human cost of the war in Gaza is etched not only in the lives lost, but in thousands living with irreversible physical trauma. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, 6,000 people have undergone amputation since the start of Israel's genocidal war, an explosion of suffering that has reshaped entire families and communities.
Before the war, there were around 1,500 cases.
resulting also from Israeli attacks, now after the war, the number increased to be over 7,500. This is an indication of their continuous suffering. The prosthetics are not available, and the lack of rehabilitation make the task of this center more challenging.
The ministry reports that children make up one in every four amputees. Their lives are abruptly transformed before they even learn to dream freely. Women account for 12.5%. Many having lost limbs while trying to protect their families or flee bombardments.
Every day, we suffer much because we don't have sufficient supportive equipment or prosthetics. Moving from one place to another is a struggle because roads are battered and damaged in the war, and the transportations are difficult.
I used to borrow the walking stick from my neighbor. At first, I got shrapnel from an Israeli attack that caused my amputation. And 1 year after the amputation, I am still getting rehabilitation with difficulty, as the cases are a lot and the center is overwhelmed.
Behind each number is a story of terror survived. Yet survival, doctors warn, is only the beginning. Gaza's shattered health system offers little for those who must now learn to live differently. Rehabilitation centers lie in ruins, prosthetic slabs lack the most basic materials, and patients often leave operating rooms to a reality without therapy, mobility aids, or even adequate pain relief.
For Gaza's amputees, the struggle now is not only for survival, but for dignity, mobility, and the ability of rebuilding hope in a place where so much has been reduced to rubble. At Ibrahim for Deir al-Balah City, Palestine.
For many people around the world, the first Palestinian Intifada may be a moment of the past, but for the Palestinian people, it remains a movement advocating general, united, and comprehensive resistance to the occupier on their soil despite the constant terror created by the Israeli occupation.
Over the past months, the West Bank has witnessed intensified military raids, home demolitions, siege of cities, and near daily assassinations and arrests. These events echo the same oppression that pushed Palestinians to rise up 37 years ago.
What's happening in Jenin is part of a wider Israeli plot to pressure and weaken the social and political structure of the refugee camp. The destruction and displacement are meant to change the reality on the ground, even if temporarily. But the resilience of the people shows what the community experienced during the first and second intifadas. In the end, the residents believe they will return, because the Jenin camp has always been a symbol of steadfastness.
Despite calculated attempts of the occupying regime to eliminate the Palestinian people through raids, land confiscation, and settlement expansion, Palestinians stand firm today.
We lived through the first and second intifadas, facing raids, demolitions, and tanks, but we always stood our ground. But this invasion has been the hardest. We were forced out of our homes and became displaced in our own land, leaving behind a camp where every corner holds memory. Still, we remain patient and steadfast. The Jenin camp isn't just a place for us, it is our life.
I am a refugee, and today, once again, I am displaced. I lived through raids, fear, and long sieges, and we always stayed strong. But being forced out of the camp this time is different. We left behind everything we built, and the place where we raised our children is no longer there.
It is not a conflict. It is the occupation of Palestine from an outside entity solely created by the West. Palestinians are being killed, their homes are demolished, and being displaced every day. What is happening in the West Bank today is part of a calculated effort to weaken, fragment, and erase the Palestinian people and their personnel, culture, and historical identity.
The first Palestinian Intifada, a defining moment 37 years ago, remains a powerful symbol of Palestinian resistance. And today, as Israeli escalation intensifies in Jenin, that same spirit continues to shape the people's determination to withstand the ongoing campaign of violence. Tiba Asi, occupied Jenin.
It
Iran's northeastern province of Golestan, once primarily known for agriculture and forestry, is emerging as a major hub for the country's fishing and aquaculture industry, thanks to recent investments in modern fisheries practices, including growth in caviar production.
The province's climate and abundant water resources make fisheries a core development sector for us. We have some of the most diverse aquaculture in the country, producing over 30,000 tons of fish, including caviar and shrimp. This capacity also positions us well to attract both local and international investors.
A key component of the province's fisheries is the Iranian caviar, which plays a central role in Golestan's export-led economy, with over 90% exported worldwide. Notably, one producer alone exported 3 tons of caviar in the previous year.
Our exports reach countries including Mexico and Brazil. This year, we exported 3 tons of caviar and produced 120 tons of sturgeon meat, used both domestically and for export. Our latest shipment also included 9 tons of crab.
Producers emphasize that using advanced technologies has helped improve production quality, representing a significant step toward boosting Iranian caviar exports.
To increase productivity and improve product quality, we enhance our water quality using modern equipment, including drum filters and ozone generators.
Golestan's fisheries infrastructure includes over 120 sturgeon farms, 15 breeding centers, and modern processing plants. Experts say that employing technologies such as recirculating aquaculture systems, AI, and genomics could raise annual caviar production to 200 tons and sturgeon meat output to 1,000 tons.
With premium-grade Iranian caviar gaining global demand, experts say that the right mix of private sector investment, state support, and modern aquaculture science could turn Golestan into a national model for sustainable fisheries.
Farzan Ashurian, Gorgon.
Sunday, in major Australian cities in support of Palestinians in Gaza, the rallies took place under the name The Genocide Continues. Protesters denounced continued Israeli attacks and restrictions on aid entry into Gaza despite a ceasefire that took effect in early October. In Brisbane, about 1,000 people took to the streets, rejecting a plan proposed by U.S. President Donald Trump to end the Gaza war.
I have family in Gaza, and they're in Jabalia, and they're completely under siege. This peace plan is not a plan for peace. This peace plan is a plan for further occupation and the further annexation of land that is not Israeli land.
Last week, some media revealed that Australia continued to transfer to Israel parts for the F-35 fighter jets and other materials, even on passenger aircraft, until October this year.
Last September, Australia recognized Palestine as a sovereign state, becoming one of more than 150 countries to do so. However, pro-Palestine advocates in Brisbane believe that much more is needed from the Australian government to satisfy its obligations under international law.
It's not enough, but there's also a lot more to happen there. There is recognizing that the genocide has been unfolding in the past 2 years, recognizing that there are approximately 100,000 Palestinians who have been killed. At least 83% of them are civilians and innocent people, women and children.
More protests in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians are expected to be organized in various Australian cities before Christmas festivities. Max Civili, Brisbane.
Tunisia's anti-normalization movement is entering a new phase. Civil society groups have announced a national initiative to gather 1 million signatures to push parliament to adopt an explicit law criminalizing normalization with the Israeli regime. The campaign builds on years of public opposition reinforced by the Trump-brokered Abraham Accords, which reignited fears of regional pressure on Tunisia to follow suit.
This initiative enjoys broad popular support.
Our goal is to collect 1 million signatures to criminalize normalization in Tunisia. Since the Abraham Accords, we witnessed growing public concern and we started raising awareness across the region, where we found strong and consistent backing.
But organizers say the process will take time. Signature collection has not yet begun, as activists work to establish a secure legal mechanism for protecting personal data, a major concern among supporters of the initiative.
We began distributing flyers across different governorates, and we are now working on the legal framework for handling personal data in coordination with the Personal Data Protection Authority and the Interior Ministry to ensure full protection for citizens.
Inside the parliament, the legislative path remains uncertain. Although lawmakers submitted a draft law to criminalize normalization, the process stalled after the speaker relayed that the presidency had warned such legislation could harm Tunisia's external national security.
Parliament has already submitted and voted on the draft law, but it was suspended and remains pending. I believe the 1 million signatures initiative can support and intensify public pressure to move the law forward.
As activists finalize the legal groundwork, the campaign highlights a national debate balancing public pressure, data protection, and the political sensitivity of the proposed law. As Tunisia moves toward launching its 1 million signature campaign, the key question is how public mobilization, data safeguards, and political institutions will converge to advance a law that remains both sensitive and highly contested. Iskandar Nawar, Tunisia.
It may be just a song contest, but analysts say this could be the moment that triggers long-awaited international pressure on the Israeli regime over its crimes against humanity. Because Israel will take part, Ireland will not participate in the 2026 Eurovision Song Contest next May. And state broadcaster RTE is also refusing to air the event.
This is great for to see Ireland boycotting. And I wish to see my own home country, Norway, do this exactly same thing. Where we have been discussing the same topic as you guys in terms of boycotting this year's Eurovision if Israel's going to participate.
Ireland will not be a participant in next year's Eurovision Song Contest.
The same step has been taken by public broadcasters in Spain, the Netherlands and Slovenia, generating widespread international coverage. Campaigners say this alone is a major victory, but they insist pressure must now intensify on EU leaders to seize the moment and impose tough sanctions on Tel Aviv.
I am ashamed to be a European at the moment because the European Union is doing nothing at all. It's not doing nothing to stop the genocide, it's contributing to the genocide.
The European Broadcasting Union, which oversees Eurovision, moved swiftly to ban Russia, yet has taken no such action against Israel. Activists argue that if a major country like Germany were to withdraw, the message would be impossible to ignore. But they say Berlin is unlikely to act due to lingering guilt over World War II.
We are seeing a genocide, you know, in front of our eyes. So you can get away from this guilt feeling and try to solve this problem.
For its part, Irish broadcaster RTE says it would be unconscionable for Ireland to be involved in the Eurovision Song Contest, given the appalling loss of life in Gaza and the humanitarian crisis there. While the decision by RTE has been broadly welcomed here in Ireland, pressure continues on the Irish government to cut all trade ties with Israel and also use its influence in Brussels to encourage other EU countries to do the same. Jerome Hughes, Dublin.
The Trump administration has released its national security strategy for 2025, a document that marks stark differences from earlier strategies issued by the same administration. Let's go over some of the key details.
Western hemispheric dominance, aiming to block what it calls foreign influence in the Americas and shift U.S. military assets toward the Western Hemisphere, away from theaters whose relative importance to American national security has declined in recent decades.
The strategy outlines a major shift in U.S. military posture. Observers say the move may be linked to recent U.S. strikes on boats in the Caribbean and the Pacific, and efforts to remove Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro by force.
Deterring conflict over Taiwan, unlike earlier strategies that framed China as the top geopolitical rival, the 2025 NSS declares that economic relations are the decisive arena. It underscores the need for allies, particularly India, to increase defense spending to help balance China's growing power in the Indo-Pacific.
The document signals a change in tone. Rather than framing China solely as a geopolitical rival, it emphasizes economic competition as the decisive arena. At the same time, it calls on allies, particularly India, to increase defense spending to help balance China's growing influence in the Indo-Pacific.
Berating Europe, criticizing Europe's migration policies, regulatory focus, and handling of Ukraine conflict, suggesting that the continent must take primary responsibility for its own defense. Switching focus from the West Asia, declaring the region no longer a top priority due to U.S. energy independence and perceived decline in conflict, though still committed to Israel's security. It goes on to argue that the conflict and violence in the region are also subsiding, citing the ceasefire in Gaza and the U.S. attack on Iran in June, which it said significantly degraded Tehran's nuclear program.
It declares the United States energy independent, a claim critics say underscores whether Washington's past involvement in the region was driven by oil. Yet critics point out that Israeli violations of the Gaza ceasefire continue, and Iran remains determined to pursue its peaceful nuclear program. Upon a question about Gaza ceasefire's phase two, Trump told reporters on Thursday that it was going along well. He acknowledged Palestinian deaths as a problem, yet he insisted that West Asia is at peace.
We have peace in the Middle East. People don't realize it. We have tremendous support. 59 countries. There's tremendous support.
Tehran has dismissed the strategy as essentially a security document for Israel. Iran argues that ensuring U.S. access to regional energy resources and guaranteeing Israel's security are the two fundamental issues driving Washington's policy in West Asia. Critics say the new national security strategy only underscores the hypocrisy of the Trump administration, revealing that America's true aim has always been dominating global energy and expanding Israel's power at any cost.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, hello and welcome. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at some of the contents of Surah Ankabut. So now let's listen to the 41st verse again.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
مثل الذين اتخذوا من دون الله أولياء كمثل العنكبوت اتخذت بيتا وإن أوهن البيوت لبيت العنكبوت لو كانوا يعلمون.
The example of those who take allies other than Allah is like that of the spider who takes a home. And indeed, the weakest of homes is the home of the spider, if they only knew.
So, brothers and sisters, regarding this 41st verse, previously we mentioned that this whole chapter, this whole surah, has been entitled Ankabut because of the name of Ankabut in this verse. So, مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ اتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ أَوْلِيَاءَ كَمَثَلِ الْعَنْكَبُوتِ. The parable of those who take guardians beside Allah is as that of the spider. اتَّخَذَتْ بَيْتًا, that makes for itself a house. We had a closer look on the quality of the materials, on the actually structure of this so-called house of Ankabut. And we had a bit of a comparison between what these houses and nests of the animal actually are. And we understood that why, in comparison with other houses, this is called Awhan al-Buyut, the frailest of all houses in this verse of the Quran. We also said that we are not ignorant of the fact that this house of spider, although it is mentioned as a proverb for the weakness it has, it is one of the wonders of the world. The webs of spider are made from some viscous liquid, which is actually stored in some small cavities, as small as the needle point located under its belly. And this liquid, saved and stored in the body of Ankabut and spider, has a very special combination that when it is exposed to the weather, it becomes hard and firm. And this is one of the wonders, one of the great wonders of the world. So, and it actually shows how great the Almighty Allah is. By its particular claws, spider draws that liquid out from these cavities and makes its webs by it. Some commentators have said that the weakness of these webs is because of their extraordinary tenderness. Else it is stronger than a steel string with the same thinness. So it is actually surprising that each of these webs sometimes comes out from a very small hole which is under its belly and in its body. And now you may think that how tender, exact, and narrow every one of these secondary webs is produced.
مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ
So, dear listeners, besides this material that this house has, and which has been mentioned in the structure of the spider's house, its structural shape is also very interesting. We said we are not negating the fact that we can reach the greatness of the Almighty Allah by merely looking at this very frailest of houses, Awhan al-Buyut. But the verse says in the very end, لَوْ كَانُوا يَعْلَمُونَ, if they know this, which means the ones who are ignorant of this fact, they think that this is the best house, this is the best refuge they might find. But they are ignorant of the fact that they are adhering, they are sticking to the frailest of houses. But at the very same time, we're not negating its beauty. I mean, if you look carefully at the sound houses of spiders, you see an interesting scenery, like a sun with its sunbeams. And it's really interesting. And this house, of course, is a suitable and ideal house for a spider. But on the whole, there cannot be considered a house weaker than this. I mean, the objects that these pagans worshipped, other than Almighty Allah, are like this house. Regarding the fact that the spider is not only of one kind, and some scholars claim that more than 20,000 sorts of spiders have been known until now, and each of them have some specialities, the greatness and power of the Almighty Allah is made in the creation of this small creature as well. I mean, if one were to look closely, he would actually understand how great the Almighty Allah is. But the application of the Quranic word awliya instead of asnam may point to one important fact. The verse says, مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ اتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ أَوْلِيَا, the parable of those who take guardians beside Allah as the is as the parable of spiders. So the verse says, these pagans have chosen some people other than the Almighty Allah as their awliya, as their guardians. But it could have said asnam, which means the idols. But why is it? This application might point to this fact that not only the man-made objects of worship, but also the leaders of non-religious groups are in the same row. And the sentence, لَوْ كَانُوا يَعْلَمُونَ, in the very end is also mentioned, and it is about the idols and those false objects of worship. And it is not about the weakness of spider's house, because the weakness of the spider's house is known to all mankind. But the point is that these people did not know what they're sticking to. So the concept of this sentence overall is, if they were aware of the weakness of the objects of worship and the positions that they had chosen other than the Almighty Allah, they would know well that these are like the webs of spider from the point of weakness. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
The following is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with school and university students. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayhi Husseiniyah on November 3, 2025, on the eve of Student Day and the National Day of Fighting Global Arrogance. They attribute the conflict between the Islamic Republic and the U.S. to your chance of down with the USA. They're being naive. It's foolish to think that simply because a nation chants down with the USA, its enemy would become this antagonistic for that reason alone. No, the down with the USA slogan isn't a matter of such gravity that the U.S. would oppose, confront, and challenge Iran solely because of that. The issue is a matter of an inherent conflict, an inherent incompatibility. It's a clash of interests between the two currents, the U.S. and the Islamic Republic. Some people ask, all right, we haven't surrendered to the U.S., but does that mean we'll never have relations with them? Are we going to oppose the U.S. forever? The answer to that question is as follows. First, the U.S.'s arrogant nature accepts nothing other than submission. This is something that all the U.S. presidents have wanted. They just didn't state this openly, but the current U.S. president has stated this. He said Iran must surrender. He essentially gave this matter away. He exposed the U.S.'s inner nature. They wanted the submission of a nation like Iran with all its capacities, its vast wealth, its background of thought and knowledge, and all its bright, highly motivated young people. What would be the meaning of such a surrender?
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Now, we cannot make guesses about what's going to happen in the distant future, but everyone must know this, that the solution to many of our problems is us becoming strong. We must make the country strong. The government must carry out its work in its various sectors with strength. The military forces must carry out their duties with strength. The youth must pursue their education and scientific advancements with strength. If the country becomes strong, and the enemy senses that confronting this powerful nation will bring no profit but only loss, then the country will definitely become immune. There is no doubt about that. Military strength is essential, scientific strength is essential, and good management of the country is essential. These things must be carried out. The strong motivation of you, the youth, is also essential. So don't lose this motivation. Don't lose this spirit.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to all our listeners from around the world. You are tuned in to Iran Radio. I'm here in the studio of Iran Radio in Tehran, announcing our program schedule for the next hour. Hope you will accompany us into the early hours of this morning. We start tonight's lineup with Minbar. You can listen to speeches on many different subjects by very well-known Islamic scholars and orators. They will be followed by our radio productions feature. After that, we have Spring of Truth, which delves into a selection of the statements and speeches by the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, may Allah bless his soul. And we round up this hour's programs with our radio productions feature. Stay with us for the next hour.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, Salamun alaikum.